Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Puck and Pod. My name is Joe.
My name is Brandon.
And I'm Paul.
Well, gentlemen, we've got another fun episode to talk about today. Why don't we get started? Major League Baseball is coming to an end.
So,
hopefully forever. I'm just kidding.
I know that I mentioned this a couple of times. It's because I'm excited about it. But I get to see the Jays next week in Toronto against the Red Sox, which could have playoff implications. And I found out something so cool this week. They're getting us a box.
Oh,
nice.
So I get to watch the game from a box in Rogers Center.
That'll be an experience, man. I mean, the
free beer, free food.
Right?
Yeah. Oh, my God.
That's going to be fun. So, and you've never experienced that before, right?
Like, not in a box. Yeah. I have seen one game at the Rogers Center, and it was in 2017, and it was a terrible game to be there.
That's right. You were saying
they lost 9-1.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was 7-0 after the first inning.
Wow.
Yeah. But the food was really good.
Yeah.
And the beer was really cold. It was really free. It's funny, though. I remember because there was 12 of us there as far as managers. And then there was 4 senior managers and 1 district manager. Excuse me. And I remember the head of our in-house brand, which is Tamco. Mm-hmm. I remember walking by him at the end of the night as he's paying his bill. And I basically remember he's an English guy.
Yeah.
And I remember him getting the bill and he goes, "Oh, you effing kidding me?" As he hands over his credit card, looked at the bill from us. It was like $5,000 or something. Like, it was just insane. But I mean, beers are $18.
Yes. Yeah.
Even in 2017, they were.
Yeah. Right? It doesn't surprise me at all.
So anyway, I'm excited. I've been trying to pick apart the Jays rotation just to see who was going to pitch that night. But I mean, they've been kind of switching it a little bit, so I don't really know.
The best part about this is that this game's going to mean something, right?
Potentially.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
Coming close to the end of the season. The Jays are doing really well this year. It's kind of surprising to watch. But this is going to be fun for you to witness for sure.
Yeah, they're very close to clinching. It's not a done deal yet. By the time this probably drops for us on Monday, they probably will have clinched, or we'll hope that they've clinched. But big steps from last year. They're making some history actually with it too. Since this is the biggest, I guess, increase of wins for them since their inaugural season in 1977, from the previous season to the next season.
Oh wow, I didn't know that. That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah, very, very, very cool.
Well, and I mean, the thing about it was last year, they actually were kind of projected to do very, very well.
Yeah.
And their bats weren't good. Their pitching wasn't very... I mean, their bullpen wasn't very good.
I feel like I remember mentioning that on the pod, actually, how it felt like every year, on paper, they were, expected to do well. Yeah. And then just something goes wrong throughout the season. This season, it seems like... I mean, knock on wood, but it seems like they are a much better team this year in terms of results.
Well-rounded, I would say.
Yeah.
I think that... do you remember, is it 5 wins to clinch?
It was 1 win.
It's 1 win?
What? 1 win to clinch.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
So, really soon...
No, sorry. So, my apologies. 6 to clinch the... The AL East, one to clinch a playoff.
The playoffs.
Yes. Okay. That's
so one win to clinch playoffs is that's pretty reasonable when you think about the expectations.
So far this year, as I was reading earlier, they right now have the potential to have, if Bo Bichette comes back from injury, which he is injured right now,
right?
If he does, it won't be until the playoffs, minimum.
Yeah.
If he comes back, they potentially have 4 players that are going to be in the top 10 in the American League for batting average.
Wow.
Wow.
So Bo Bichette right now is hitting .311. George Springer is hitting .305, which is a career year for him, as well as 29 homers for Springer.
Yeah.
The Springer dingers.
Springer dingers.
And Vladdy's hitting .302, which he's been kind of up and down like a yo-yo.
Mm-hmm.
Very cold lately. And the same with Alejandro Kirk, who I think is 9th or 10th in the American League right now, and he's hitting .292.
Mm-hmm.
But a week ago, he was hitting .304.
Wow. Yeah.
So he's gone pretty cold.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's pretty... I don't think I can remember a time where they've had even, 2 players in the top 10 in the American League for batting average.
Well, talk about a turnaround for George Springer, right? He's leading the team in home run, leading the team in home runs. That's just... Everyone thought he was done last year.
Yeah.
And for him to turn it around and be, obviously, he's got World Series experience, and they're not necessarily favored to win the World Series, but they have from what the statistics are saying right now, the Jays have a 13.6% chance of being the World Series winners this year. So, yeah. Which, again...
Wouldn't that be incredible?
If you looked at earlier this season when they actually had, I think it was like a 7 or 8 game losing streak, you're like, all right, it's the same thing again.
Here
but,
we go again, yeah.
The only other two teams that have greater percentages right now are the Phillies and the Brewers.
Nobody's going to stop the Brewers the way they're going.
Yeah.
I mean, so, especially not in the National League.
And who are they playing again when you go see them?
The Jays?
Yeah.
They're playing the Red Sox.
The Red Sox. Okay.
So in the AL East right now, the Jays are in first spot with 89 wins. The Yankees have 85.
Mm-hmm.
So they're 4 games back. By the way, we are watching the Yankees game as we speak against Baltimore, who are god-awful, by the way. But the Yankees are winning right now, so that's not the best. But anyway, because the Jays lost today.
Top of the seventh for the Yankees.
The Yankees have 85 wins, 67 losses, and the Red Sox are right behind them with 83 wins.
Okay.
And I don't know if the Sox won today or if they're playing right now. I can check after.
Mm-hmm.
But that 3-game series is going to be so important. And I mean, probably more important for Boston than it is for Toronto.
Yeah.
I guess we'll see what the next few days, what happens in the next few days, but...
If they're how many games do they have until then to play?
Up until that day or left in the
like
season?
Like between today and that day, specifically.
There's today's
September 28th is the last day of the season.
Right.
I believe there is.
They have 5 games to play.
So and they need 6 wins to clinch the pennant.
Yeah.
Let's say they win 5 in a row coming up to that game, or 4 in a row, pardon me, coming up to that game. That game's going to mean a lot to the Blue Jays, too.
Having said that, now that you've mentioned that, I'm kind of scared. Because if they clinch, they're probably going to rest their regulars.
Yeah.
Because it's not going to matter.
Yeah, but they won't clinch that day. They wouldn't clinch until another win. They need one more win.
I guess.
Like, it'll be a really important win.
Having said that, though, if there's any combination of the Yankees and Sox losing over the next 5 days and the Jays winning, that could change the dynamic, too.
Right.
So, man, now I'm kind of nervous.
Is it 9 games that are left in the season?
9 games.
Yeah.
As of today, there's 9 games.
How many games do they play in a year? Like 140 something?
162.
162.
Almost double the games that. NBA and NHL
play. NHL is raising their stakes too next year. I think not this coming year, but the year after.
Is it 84 games?
84 games.
The NHL's doing it too.
Yeah. They're going to shorten the preseason by 2 games and lengthen the regular season by 2 games.
If you watch half the people in the MLB these days, though, you don't really have to be in shape. So
yeah, it's
different game. Especially if you're a pitcher.
So. Yeah. It's not as taxing on the body.
It's funny though when you think about the fact that they do play doubleheaders too, and a lot of times, and you're just like, wow, how do they do that? But like you say, it's not always the same players and stuff.
Just think of classic like Bartolo Colon, who's like 6'3½ bones on the mound. Just like if he ever fall over, man, he would be 7.4 on the Richter scale. Holy cow, that guy
like
coming at you.
David Wells back in the day too. He was a big guy.
Oh, he was big.
I mean, Babe Ruth was a big guy, wasn't
he? That is true.
Yeah. But you know, so the Blue Jays season is coming close to an end. They've got a lot to play for between now and the end of the season. So it's going to be exciting baseball to watch. And by the time this podcast airs, they could only need like what 2-3 more wins, basically, before they clinch a pennant. One more win and they clinch the playoffs, and that's really all they want at this point. Like really, that's what the fans want anyway, is playoff baseball.
Try to stay out of the wild card spot though,
because
they don't seem to have any luck in the wild card, especially if they play the
wild
Mariners.
Card
well, what's the wild card? Is it a one game playoff or what is it? Three games?
Two out of three.
Okay, so it's a best of three.
It was one game for. Two or three years ago.
Yeah.
And then I think it might have been last year or the year before.
I think it was the
first
year before
time
that.
Where they switched to a 3-game series.
Yeah.
I feel like that's fair. That's fair.
It can't just be one game. It can't.
It reminds me actually of the, and I compare everything to the NHL, but it reminds me of the playoff bubble, right? When they had that play-in series as well. Best of three is really the best way to do it because you give a team a chance to stay in it. And it makes more, and they're making more money in the end anyway, you know, really, when it comes down to it.
As much as we say that, you know, these guys play every day and it is 162 game season, that's still a long season.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, I mean, for you to lose one game after the entire year, like, yeah, that's
the culmination.
Awful.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty awful.
Makes no
sure.
sense.
No.
And you look at the Jays, obviously, one of the big things is that the farm obviously has improved a lot. I think getting the new hitting coaches really made a difference. But anyone that they called up this year was able to contribute, which you couldn't say about years past when it came to the Jays. That, you know, sometimes you might have a guy like David Schneider. When he first came up, he had this, you know, historic start, but then last year he couldn't do next to anything. This year he's found that niche again, but it's not just been Schneider. It's been Jonathan Classe. It's been unexpected Miles Straw. Like, you know, just any
Joey LaPerfido's had a year. Addison Barger has really stepped up.
You look at their top prospect. I mean, Trey Savage had an amazing start. 9 strikeouts in his very first game. Like,
sorry, not an MLB record, but a Blue Jays record for most strikeouts in an MLB debut.
That's cool. That's awesome.
So there's lots to be excited about. Obviously, I know that, especially myself, I've been pandering on the Jays for the last couple of years here because it just seemed like they were going nowhere. But I don't know, maybe too quick to judge. I'm still not the biggest Shapiro and Atkins supporter, but I'm glad at least, I guess, what their vision was has started to come to fruition.
What's nice is that for a change, some of their players that they've been developing are starting to come through.
Yeah.
When Yesavage pitched the other night, his entire minor league team was in the stands rooting for him, watching.
That's so
including, nice. Like, their second best prospect. His name's Arjun Nimala.
Yeah.
He's a shortstop prospect. He's, I think, their second or third rated prospect right now, something like 45th in all of baseball.
Wow.
And he was, you know, right there cheering him on, and just, yeah, his Yesavage's family was there. It's interesting because now I'm curious what their rotation is going to start looking like, because they've got 6 or 7 quality MLB starters that they can use. Don't get too ahead of ourselves. Yesavage only pitched one game, but he looked very, very, very impressive.
Good. Yeah,
His slider, and the way it sunk was.
I feel like baseball is one of those games because it's such a mental game, especially for pitchers. That if you do well your first game like that, I think that is something you can look at and go, well, that's impressive.
Yeah,
you know, to be able to overcome a lot of those mental obstacles. It makes sense to me that you would be excited for a player like that.
Quite often in the majors, rookie pitchers, especially in their first few starts, tend to usually have success.
Yeah.
And a lot of the reason is none of these MLB hitters have seen their stuff before.
That's right. Yeah.
So Yesavage is coming in. Now, here's an example. I'm sure you've heard of the name Justin Verlander.
Mm-hmm.
I know you have. One of the best of all time, currently now, even. He's 41, I think, so he's probably kind of coming to the end of his career too. But he has a delivery where he really comes over the top.
Right.
Like, he, up until Yesavage, which I'll get to, he currently has the highest release point in the major leagues. Something stupid, like, who cares, right?
Yeah.
But it's just, my point being is that Yesavage, so I think Verlander was 7.11.
Mm-hmm.
And Yesavage is 7.18
feet
in release point. And what that is, when you're already on the mound, which is lifted, and you've got a high release point, when you throw a pitch like Yesavage does for his strikeout pitch, which is a splitter, it's a hard pitch. It looks like a fastball. And then right at the end, it just falls. Just completely drops.
Yeah.
Well, when you're coming at a high angle anyway, it's just a constant downward thing.
Yeah.
But you have like 0.2 seconds to think about swinging.
Make a decision.
And so, I mean,
this is why I never made it in baseball. Yeah.
Because, I mean, he had 4 or 5 out of the 9 strikeouts that were swinging strikeouts all on his splitter pitch. So just a weird stat that I saw the other day when they were comparing like the high release point, and it really does make a difference.
Yeah.
Nobody has seen that pitch before.
Yeah.
So of course he was getting guys looking silly.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, that may last for 2 or 3 starts, and then maybe he'll give up 6 home runs in a game or something silly, and he gets shelled 8-1, you know?
He didn't have a perfect start either. Like, he gave up, I think it was a double and a single his very first few batters that he faced and gave up a run to start the game. So it's not like it was a perfect start, but as the game progressed, obviously you got to see more of his stuff, and he's obviously very confident in what he does. So
I feel like recovery is important for a player, a pitcher, pardon me.
Yeah,
it just feels like if you can overcome the obstacles, but also like if you make a mistake or two, if you can come back from that and finish strong, that's impressive for sure.
I'm chuckling because there are exceptions to that.
And yeah.
I was referencing David Wells you were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
I remember because he pitched a no-hitter with the Yankees.
Oh.
And I remember a story saying that he was out till like 4 in the morning the night before, just absolutely gooned. Came in like he was feeling crappy and he just looked like hell. And he gets out there on the mound and he throws a no-hitter. A guy who's already 300-plus pounds, just looks like a slob, but then just... He had it. Had it that day.
Yeah, I think a lot of that too comes from like just the idea of like, you know, nobody's gonna look down on my play. You know,
yeah.
Like, I'm gonna just do what I can to make sure.
I'm gonna do whatever I want. I'm a major league pitcher.
Yeah. For him, I guess it's getting gooned. You know, Phil Kessel's eating hot dogs, right?
So. Eating hot dogs.
There's always somebody. You got like Dennis Rodman out there. Yeah, it's the same idea. Yeah.
What do you think about their bullpen situation?
Obviously, the tough month that Hoffman had was a big scare, iffy, I guess, if you want to put it that way. Like, you're giving up wins in the ninth. No fan's going to enjoy watching that. Yeah. So,
for reference, Joe, Jeff Hoffman is supposed to be their closer.
Right.
And he's given up the most home runs this year in the eighth inning or later, and it's 15. Yeah. So your closer... pitches maybe once every few days, once every couple of days, and one inning.
I was going to say, two. Is it usually like the seventh inning they put him in? Or
no,
the eighth
I mean, if you're up, usually your closure doesn't come in until the ninth.
Right.
But he's given up 15 home runs in the last two innings of the game, which is top in the major leagues.
Yeah.
And I think he's given up like six in the last month alone.
Yeah.
So he's kind of, I think they're, Schneider keeps wanting to put him out there because he is a good pitcher. But something's just not clicking right now. His release point, maybe he's tipping something. People are catching, you know, other players are catching up on that.
Surprised that also Louis Varland's been struggling since acquiring him from the deadline as well. He was pretty lights out for Minnesota, but I guess I don't. Maybe he's having a hard time adjusting to the system in Toronto. I don't quite know. Maybe there was less pressure in Minnesota because they weren't really playing like a playoff team this year.
Yeah.
Obviously. You need those guys that you expect to make an impact to show up come playoff time. So I'm hoping whatever is going inside some of these closers' heads, of the relievers' heads, that a guy like Pete Walker can help them iron through it. And we go far this year in the playoffs. I'd like to see, you know. Yeah. World Series, obviously.
Obviously, yeah. I mean, that's the dream. I know a lot of Blue Jays fans just want to see him in the playoffs, right? I mean, they've been up and down for so long. It just feels like that's the thing they're missing.
And even in the last two times that they've made the playoffs, they've been in that play-in series, basically the wild card series, and they've lost both times.
Yeah.
Haven't won a game.
So there you go.
Toronto fans are a little used to that, I think, when it comes down to it.
Oh, just stop. Just stop.
I don't mean that.
Seven out of
9
years.
Just stop, says the guy who cheers for a team who doesn't make the playoffs.
Exactly. I'm not chirping. But
yes, you are. It's okay.
Yeah, maybe a little. All right. But no, so, you know, with the Blue Jays where they are at, how does that compare to the rest of the league? Like, with the season coming to an end, who are we looking at the top of the league right now? Because I know the Blue Jays were on top of the league at one point this year.
Right now, like the playoff picture, if you give me 2 seconds here.
I believe the Brewers are the team that are leading.
Mm-hmm.
And the Jays played a series against them a month ago. And a lot of the talk during the broadcast and during the games was the fact that the Brewers are having so much success with players who aren't really star players.
Mm.
Same type of thing is that all of their young players that they've drafted and developed came at the same time. And they're just playing for each other.
Yeah.
They're a low market team. They don't have a budget. They're not paying these guys very much money, but they're just playing. So
kind of reminds you of Moneyball a little bit.
Yeah. So my point being is that a team like the Brewers that construct their team that way, if they're not successful this year or next, those players are going to get stupid money in free agency and then they're 100%. Not going to play for the Brewers anymore.
Yeah. That's right.
Pittsburgh Pirates, who is my dad's favorite team, has been facing that for decades. They're just a low-budget team.
Yeah.
So a guy like Paul Skeens, who's probably the best pitcher in the MLB right now, he's going to be there for how long? Couple more years, and then he's going to get $85 million a season somewhere else. The Dodgers, probably.
His contract will run up, and he'll go.
And he'll go somewhere else because Pittsburgh can't pay him. So,
well, I think that's been part of. It's funny how you look at a team like the Tampa Rays. It's the same thing. They've been a relatively low budget team, and they've produced players that seem to make it through. They're a playoff team, but give them 2 or 3 years, they're off playing somewhere else. It's kind of sad that that you have that dynamic, but you know, that's the MLB, besides being a sport to watch, it's a business, and some owners do a really good job of marketing their team and being able to, you know, make money off of them and then invest that money further into the team and getting crowds to come.
Yeah, for sure.
To allude to Paul's point earlier, the standings as of right now, the Brewers are in first place, and this is in the league.
Right.
Excuse me, the entire MLB, not the National League or American League. The Brewers are in first place, 93-59. The Phillies are in second place, 91-62. And the Jays are in third place with 89-64.
Yeah, the season was to start today.
Yeah.
If it was the playoff is to start today. Yeah. Blue Jays and Tigers would get the bye in the first round. The Wild Card Series would be the Astros versus the Red Sox. And then the Yankees versus the Mariner in the AL side.
Yeah.
And then if you were going NL, Brewers and the Phillies obviously have the bye there. It'd be Dodgers versus the Mets, and then Cubs versus the Padres.
It's crazy to me that the Blue Jays haven't clinched a playoff spot and they're the top three in the league right now. it just obviously goes to show how tight the standings are.
In Major League Baseball, you can be a 500 team and make the playoffs. It's kind of like football that way.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas in hockey, it's not likely that's going to happen. In basketball, it's not likely that's going to happen. Mm-hmm.
But the CFL is an interesting one because the CFL, there's only so many teams. Literally, like, one team doesn't make the playoffs.
That sucks. Yeah.
Like, you're that one team. There might be two, but I'm pretty sure it's because there's nine teams. So because it's an odd number, like, one team doesn't make it and everybody else gets to play.
Yeah.
I think it used to be only four that made something the playoffs, like that, but they had to have more teams so that they can...
Yeah, they're one game series. Yeah, there's one game series. You know, you're not gonna watch, you know, two days of playoffs and then you're done, kind of thing. Like, it doesn't make any sense. So, yeah. Can I talk a little bit about the CFL? Or are you cool with that? I just thought of we haven't talked about the CFL at all this year, except at the beginning of the season. But I was really excited about the BC Lions this year, and
I remember your excitement. Actually,
it's unfortunate, but you know, they've had such an up and down year, and their biggest problem, like they don't have a problem scoring touchdowns. Their offense is great. The defense has been hurting them like you wouldn't believe. And the big rhetoric specifically around the team is that Mike Benavides, who is their defensive coordinator, is the problem because he's running the same plays over and over and over again. This is the thing that I'm hearing from fans, right? And I tend to agree. Like, I watch it and I'm like, why are you guys doing the same thing over? Like, come on, like, you can try something new here. The other sort of argument behind that is that a lot of their defensive players are actually like new players, like rookies to the CFL, rookies to professional football, period. And so, you know, as promising as they are, they're not experienced when it comes to the game. And so, yeah, they come in and they're running the same plays because of this, because they're rookies on the team. So the argument can kind of go both ways. I really do think that, you know, they made some trades recently, literally within the last couple of weeks, to bring in some better defensive players. And the last game they played, which was against, I believe it was Ottawa, if I remember correctly, that they just played, they ended up winning, luckily. However, I say this with an asterisk because they had a big lead going into the fourth quarter and gave up a lot of points in the fourth quarter. And this has kind of been a repetitive thing for the Lions this year specifically. They'll come into a big lead near the end of the game and then they'll give up multiple touchdowns in the third and fourth quarter just to lose the lead and lose the game.
Yeah.
So this is kind of the deal with them this year. It does look like they'll probably make the playoffs. I think they have actually clinched already, if I remember correctly. The Grey Cup will be played in November. It always is every year. So we are coming close to the end of the regular season. But, yeah, they have a couple more games to play. So, you know, we'll see what happens. If you were to ask me right now who the top team in the league is, I probably couldn't tell you. I would say probably Saskatchewan, just from the way it looks.
Rough Rider fans are probably cheering through the
Rough Rider. Okay, province. So you guys are going to like this reference, being Leaf fans, but we always say Rough Rider fans are the Leaf fans of the CFL.
100%.
But, you know, the argument was kind of going towards the Blue Bombers for a little while because the Bombers were such a good team for so long.
Yeah, they were.
they were a good team for like four straight years, like made the Grey Cup for four straight years. So we're just like, no, not again, you know, with the Blue Bombers. But that being said, you know, it is what it is. And it's always funny when you look at a team on paper before the season starts and you think they've got this guy, they've got this guy, they've got this guy. And like I said, offensively, they were great. This year, this has been a really great year for them scoring touchdowns and whatnot. But defensively has been really, really hurting them and giving up those big leads at the end of the games. You cannot do that. You have to hold that lead. And I think that's the issue that they're coming across right now.
It looks like Saskatchewan and Calgary are the top two teams in the CFL.
BC plays Calgary tonight, I believe. Either tonight or tomorrow. I think it's tomorrow, actually. But yeah.
Rough Riders are 10-3 and the Stamps are 8-4.
Calgary's quarterback is the Lions' ex-quarterback, Vernon Adams Jr., who was in tandem with Nathan Rourke. But of course, because Nathan Rourke signed that big contract, there's no place for Vernon Adams on the team. They had to end up trading him away, and so they traded him to Calgary. And you know, I'm sure this year has been great for him. There's one problem with Vernon Adams that a lot of people don't notice is that he's not good at making quick decisions. So when the ball is hiked and it's called the pocket where the quarterback stands, right? And everybody kind of blocks the players from getting to the quarterback. That pocket closes really fast. And when that happens, the quarterback has to make a quick decision, be able to get rid of the ball, run the ball, do anything. He stays in that pocket for a really long time. And that's kind of the thing that we found frustrating about having him on BC is that he never made those quick decisions. So we tended to, you know, get a lot of two and outs, things like that, or quarterback sacks or whatever. I haven't watched much of Calgary football this year, so I don't know what it looks like for them. But I know that was a problem we were having with Vernon Adams on our team. So
now, is he still quite young?
He's I think he's in his 30s. To me, that's young, but as a player, I think that's, you know, he's cutting close to the end there for sure. But
the reason I say that is, and I think, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, you guys might know a little bit more than I do, but like a guy, for example, like Peyton Manning, wasn't he known for being patient in the pocket?
Yeah, like some players are. Nathan Rourke is a good example.
Doug Flutie, I think, did that.
Doug Flutie was famous for that,
But I mean, you have to have a good offensive line.
You do. It's a combination of two things. You have to have a good offensive line who block really well, but also you have to be able to see the field really well too, because a lot of times a player will run a route this way and another player will run a route this way and another player will be running a route over here, but you might not be looking here. You know what I mean? Like you have to be able to see everything.
Yeah.
And that's something that we as Lions fans have found that Vernon Adams was never very good at. Yeah. Nathan Rourke, on the other hand, is a complete opposite. He's both slippery. He gets out of checks really well, or tackles really well, and he sees the field really well. So it's a really nice thing to see. You just need that O-line, the offensive line, to be able to block the defensive line from getting to him just enough time, right, so that he can get the ball away.
And
so,
you have to have full trust in that offensive line.
Exactly.
If you're always feeling rushed to make a decision, you're never going to make the right one.
100%. Yeah, 100%. So, you know, it's been an interesting season for the Lions. We'll see what happens. I mean, like I said, I'm pretty sure they're going to make the playoffs. I don't see a point where they end up losing out, basically. But again, playing good teams, it just depends on how they can close out those games.
Yeah.
And, you know, the game against Calgary is going to be a really important one. By the time this podcast airs, that game will be over. Hopefully they can figure out a way to beat them, but, you know.
See, and I'm a Stamps fan. So.
I know. Yeah, I believe it. I believe
it. I'm hoping the Stamps got it.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see what happens. I won't get to watch because I'll be doing the Clippers game tomorrow. Tomorrow's home opener, so.
That's right.
Yeah, it's a busy time for me right now.
So across the street from where the Lions play is your good old Canucks.
Yes.
Training camp opened today.
They're doing training camp in Penticton this year, which last year as well,
I think. Across the street and
down the road
400 kilometers. Yeah.
And you know, I don't know if you're aware of this, but Penticton is no longer in the BCHL.
And WHL.
So they're in the WHL as of this year. So that's kind of interesting that they're kind of giving up their space, because I believe WHL is all in ready getting part of me getting ready for their regular season to start too. So
junior hockey always starts.
Yeah, it starts a little
quite a bit earlier.
Starts a little earlier. It's funny, like, so you know, this year I'm doing announcing for the Clippers in the BCHL, and then I'm also working for the VIU Mariners, which I believe you're going to do a couple games as well.
I guess we'll see.
Yeah,
I don't know which ones.
So with that being said, like the VIU University hockey, it seems to start a little later. They actually start preseason this weekend. So it's going to be interesting. Kind of, I'm doing the Clippers game tomorrow, and then the next day is the VIU Mariners game. So kind of interesting to see. It'll be fun to do something different, I think.
Yeah, we'll have to have a talk about how it goes, because I need to
and what the game is like.
Yeah,
from what I understand, they draw a big crowd.
Yes, I've heard that too. I've also heard that the cheap beers help for college students.
I think it helps everybody.
That's that they play at the Ice Center, right?
Yeah, the Nanaimo Ice Ice Center. Yep. So the same place that the Nanaimo Buccaneers play. So yeah, it'll be fun to sort of see how that goes. I've actually never been to a Mariners game before, so
I have not either. Yeah.
Yeah. So it should be fun. But yeah, the Canucks. You know, they started training camp today. From what I understand, everybody's present. There might be two players, I believe, that had surgeries that aren't able to participate on the ice, but not like major players. I think one of them is Jet Wu, and another sort of rookie or something that's coming off a surgery. So from what I'm reading, there's no drama right now, which is really exciting. It's tough when you go into a season like last year with all the noise and everything that's going around. For the most part, it's not even caused by the players. It's caused by the media and all the talk, right? Yep. So yeah, it definitely was a frustrating season, even for fans last year. And like we talked about, the Canucks only missed the playoffs by like 6 points or something like that. You know, a couple more wins and they would have been in. So it just it's really going to be interesting to see what they can do, what kind of structure they play, especially with Adam Foote as their head coach this year.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to it. I can't wait to see.
It's like a clean slate, right?
Yeah,
in a way.
So exactly. Yeah.
To reference that ideology. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you've probably got more to talk about for the Canucks, but I think from what I've heard, it was sort of the same for the Leafs camp. And Pierre LeBrun was saying that because he was there today, mm-hmm. and he said for the first time in about a decade, it just seemed like there wasn't this anvil sitting on the shoulder of all the players. Yeah. It was light. It was.
Would you say that would be because of Marner? Like, is that a Marner thing?
I think it's a combination, Joe. I think three things. I think that's part of it, because for a couple of seasons, I think behind the scenes, he's probably had a foot out the door. Mm-hmm. I think the players have known that. Yeah. And that's tough when not only is he your assistant captain, but arguably your best player.
Yeah.
So that's tough when you may have a thought in the back of your head that he doesn't want to be there.
Yeah.
So I think that is part of it. The other side is Brendan Shanahan's now gone. So there's currently nobody in that position. It's Brad Treliving's team.
No more Shanna plan.
Yeah. As far as I know, Keith Pelley, who they hired from, I don't know. I can't remember off the top of my head, but a football club over in Europe.
That's right.
And
which probably Manchester or something like that.
Tremendous success with. Very smart businessman. But from what I understand, he's pretty much staying out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so Brad Treliving now has autonomy to make this his team.
Yeah.
And they were saying that they think for the first time in a decade, the Leafs team, the GM, the coach, completely on the same page.
Yeah.
And they now have the roster that they want.
Mm-hmm.
Ish. You know, like there's more moves to be made.
But
it's not the weight of the world on four shoulders anymore when it comes to the team. Like there's always the talk about the core four, and that's because you had like almost 50% of the cap allotted to four players. Now that you can spread out a bit of the wealth and you can bring in some additional skill in the other lines, not that they haven't been able to find diamonds in the rough. I think the Leafs have actually done decently with that, but you know, there's something to be said about somebody that's able to put together what two other players can do by themselves kind of thing and still not be overpaid to do it. When you look at a guy like Nicolas Waugh, who's really well known for his defensive
capabilities. What name did he just say? I missed that.
Nicolas Waugh.
I thought you weren't on board with that.
I'm not on board with it. I just repeated what he said.
I was waiting for you to kind of Canadianize it a little bit.
But you look at a guy like Nicolas Waugh,
Americanize,
right?
I guess.
He's really known for his defensive, but he does have a scoring touch. You can't say that about every single player that's been in the bottom six with the Leafs in the past.
Well, I mean, honestly, too, when you get rid of a player like Mitch Marner, you need somebody with scoring in return. You need that. I mean, you can't just have a defender come back and somebody who's going to stop, you know, throw checks and stuff. Like, yes, you need that, but you also need somebody who has some hockey sense to him as well.
The nice thing about it too is a portion of the cost, right? Like, again, Marner is an amazing player, but he was eating up, like I said, about, what, 15% of the cap on his own kind of thing. So if you're now able to spread that out into guys like Dakota Joshua, Nicola Waugh,
Matias Michelli. John Tavares now making a third of what he was.
What's he making, like $3 million?
4.3.
Yeah, 4.3.
Yeah. From 11.
Yeah. It kind of reminds me, it's funny, because they're not the same player by any means, but it reminds me of Tyler Myers on Canucks, being that he was making $6 million, and everyone's like, get rid of this guy, he's costing too much on the cap. And then he signs for $3 million after that, right? So it's like, okay, $3 million I can handle.
I like him now.
Yeah. and he's making way less mistakes, you know, now that he's making less money, right? Less pressure on him.
Well, nice thing about, like, is at least they actually have still some cap space. And they have so many forwards. It's nice to have, I guess, so much. To a certain extent, I think they have too much right now, and they can have a little bit more cap, but they've always been a cap-strapped team, and they've actually got some cap ability.
Canucks
right
will now. Take a center off your hands anytime, especially a second-line center.
There's a couple available.
Yeah.
I think the key to that point, Paul, is the fact that they've got some cap space, but the players they do have are locked in at that contract for this year beyond that.
Yeah. So nobody's on a one-year kind of,
With all the players that they have, like, they're all going to battle, obviously, to make the team. Like, even today, again, we're recording this on Thursday, Cal Yarnkark stood out for what Berube said in regards to today at day one at camp. So, you know, he might push himself into the conversation of being in the opening day lineup. But it's obviously, we still have to go through training camp, preseason, but that's what you want to hear. You want to hear everyone battling, and if you lose somebody to waivers, oh, well, so at least everyone put their effort in.
Yeah, for sure. It's funny. I saw a lot of pictures on Twitter today showing Rick Tocchet and his training camp starting in Philly. And I just for some reason I thought about, like, when you guys are talking about the Leafs getting ready for training camp and stuff. It's like, yeah, you guys are going to have to play Rick Tockett's team a couple of times. Now, Berube and Tockett are really good friends. So it's going to be interesting to see how they kind of match up together. I foresee... This is just me. I foresee Toronto being a much heavier team than Philly, just based on the players that they have on their teams, right? But you guys have Scott Laughton on your team, who is an ex-Flyer, so it'll be kind of interesting to see how he plays against them, too.
I saw something today where Scott Laughton said that his favorite player growing up was Darcy Tucker.
Nice.
Yes, sir.
There you go. Nice. Yeah.
I love it. Play like him. Come on.
Yeah, exactly.
Just lose your... Never mind. I won't say that. Who's your stuff?
Yeah.
One of the things we'll see during training camp, obviously, is PTOs that will be signed. There's a few that have been signed right now by different teams. I'll list off the names, and you tell me if you think they'll make the team or not. Robbie Fabry is on a PTO with the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Oh yeah.
100%.
Guaranteed.
Yeah, I think so.
Luke Glendening with the New Jersey Devils.
Not sure about that one. He's a winger, right?
Center winger.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm not sure there's room.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're a good team.
He's got to impress. You know,
for him, it's a benefit. He plays a PTO with them and then signs a contract with somebody else. I can see that happening.
Didn't he play with them a couple of seasons ago?
I think so.
For a small stretch?
I think so.
Like after the trade deadline? Yeah.
I know he played for Tampa at one point, but...
I think I remember him in a Devil's jersey. I think I remember.
He might have been.
He also played for the Canucks.
Yeah.
And
No. Not Luke.
No?
No. Adam Glendening did.
Okay,
oh,
so
Clendenning, yeah,
right. Okay, so then he played many of his years in Detroit.
Yes,
is that correct?
Yes. Maybe that's the jersey I'm thinking of, actually.
Right,
instead of a Devil jersey.
Yeah, I'm not sure there's room in New Jersey, but I mean, if he impresses, there'll be room for anyone.
Yeah, you know, especially if he plays center, I can see anybody. Vancouver needs more center. Like, I can see that happening too.
Absolutely.
So but it does surprise me that they never signed any PTOs in Vancouver.
They still can.
I guess, I mean, they still can for actual preseason, but yeah.
They could have an injury or two go down tomorrow.
That's actually what happened with Sprong, he was signed, like, right before preseason started or something. He missed camp but played preseason, and then they ended up trading him away. They signed him, and then they ended up trading him to Seattle. He's apparently just lighting it up in the KHL right now, from what I understand. Yeah,
He has skill.
Yep.
Just needs to put it all together.
The thing about it is the NHL and the KHL are, like, way different, you know.
Yeah,
it's, NHL is a speed and skill game. KHL is kind of a speed game. You know, you don't play a lot of defense in the KHL, which is perfect for him, according to Rick Tocchet.
Not for Vadim Shipachov.
Yeah, really. Yeah.
couldn't play in the NHL.
Ship him off is what his name is.
Ship him off.
Am I right?
I think this is an easy one. Matt Grizzlick with the Blackhawks.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. He had 40 points last year, but one goal.
I was kind of surprised.
One goal.
Really?
39 assists and one goal with the Penguins last year.
What, you said Grizzlick, not Domi?
Yeah, really. Yeah. They are the same player.
Sorry, Max. Who, by the way, is injured and not in Leafs training camp right now.
No, not right now.
Yeah. Body.
Yeah.
Jack Johnson with the Minnesota Wild.
I don't know.
He's 38 years old.
Yeah, that would be my concern.
Never kissed.
I'm not 100% sure what Minnesota's complete decor looks like, but traditionally they've had pretty decent D in Minnesota. That's just the style they've always played.
I don't know if you heard me. I said, never kissed a girl, which is a tragically hip song, 38 years old.
Nice.
Sorry. Just putting that out.
I didn't catch it, but I like it.
Jack Johnson?
Yeah, I'm with Brandon. I'm not sure I see it either. I don't see the fit, to be honest, on that team. But, you know, with the fact that they need a player like... they just signed Kaprizov, right? Or is he still unsigned?
He was the one who turned down $40 million
a
year.
That's right, yeah. So he's still unsigned. They might take him just for the sake of filling that spot.
Yeah.
You know, who knows what's going to happen, though? Who knows? And they did sign Rossi for 2 years, right? So was it 2 years or 3 years?
I thought it was 4 years.
Oh, maybe.
I thought
it was short-term because I thought the idea was, or the plan was, that he wanted to be traded or something.
Yeah, probably.
Know. Hard to keep up with the gossip these days.
Wild also signed Brett Leeson. He's a center right winger, very tall. Played for the Ducks last year, had 17 points.
Who's that? Sorry,
Brett Leeson.
He's like an extra. He'll probably sit in the press box
by default. Because I'm ignorant and naive, I'm just gonna say no.
Okay. The Hurricanes signed both Oliver Shillington, even though it looks like Kylington.
Well, Shillington played for Calgary, didn't he?
He did. Yeah.
St. Louis.
Yep.
But I remember him
played for Anaheim.
In Calgary.
Yeah. And they also signed Kevin LeBanc to a PTO.
Okay, so LeBanc gets signed for sure. Just because of the grit and style that he plays, I can see him signing. I'm not sure about Shillington. I know Shillington, so from when he played on Calgary, he was a bit of a playmaker, wasn't he? Like passing the puck
was,
a lot?
He's definitely an offensive defenseman. Yeah. His two-way game was coming around, but he's also dealt with some injuries that have kind of...
And sorry, what team is that?
Both of them with the Hurricanes.
With the Hurricanes. Does the Hurricanes need defense right
now? Well, Brent Burns left.
Yeah, true. Well,
Shillington
also... Does he play the left or right side?
Shillington?
Yeah.
Left side.
Left side. Okay. And Burns was on the left.
And he's only 28.
Oh, no. Yeah. Burns was young guy. But Burns was a right shot defense.
What I will say about Shillington is that he was also in the NHL assistance program.
Yeah.
Right.
I can't remember. I don't know what it was for, if it was mental health or addiction. I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. I didn't look that far into it. But there was a couple of teams that wanted to give him a shot coming back from that, right?
Hopefully they did the research anyway. And figured
out. I mean, he played in Colorado last year and then was traded to Anaheim. And, I mean, in 19 games, he had 5 points, was a minus... two.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't a key factor. He's probably in and out of the lineup.
Having a hard time finding a home these days.
You look at old guy coming back as well, and former Oiler, Milan Lucic in the Blues.
You think of him as a former Oiler, Ed. I find that so funny. He was an Oiler, he was a Flame,
he was a Bruin.
A Bruin.
And then a Bruin. A Bruin, yeah.
That's where he made his name for himself.
Yeah.
You should know that, Joe.
You want a cup. I know. I do know that. But, I mean, I know it, too, because he's famous. He's infamous for his being from Vancouver and getting into fights and stuff at the Roxy because, you know, that's what people do these days when they go to...
He had signed, actually, a PTO with the Bruins back in 23-24, but had to pull out because he also went into the assistance program.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I do remember that, actually. Yeah.
He might be a Tocchet type player that could play on the bottom line, but I guess it really, really Tocchet. Depends. Or not Tocchet,
not
sorry.
Not Tocchet. He just signed in Philly?
Montgomery.
I was thinking Philly.
Sorry.
Jimmy Boy likes his big boys too.
Yes, he does.
I mean, St. Louis market's sort of the same way, right? They Berube was there before. And it just they like that hard-nosed big boy hockey.
I think that's the thing when it comes to hockey in general is it is like an old boys game, and a lot of the coaches, that's their style, and they stick to it no matter where they go, right?
Do you think that it's kind of gone full circle though? Because I mean, 70s and 80s, it was all about intimidation. Even 90s, really, yeah. It was all about intimidation. Through the 90s into the 2000s, it kind of became more flashy, more about skill, smaller forwards. That's when the shootout came in, and then it's just kind of been that way. But I find the last three or four seasons, it's kind of gone back. Like, as an example, fighting dropped way off.
Yeah,
it did.
In the late 2000s into the 2010s and forward. And then the last two or three years, it seems to have picked right back up again.
Yeah.
Well, you're starting to see a lot more of, like, unicorn forwards like Matthew Tkachuk and players that are bringing that grit and skill.
It's like a new style of power forward who they are skilled yet also physical.
Yeah.
And I think that's the difference.
And I love it. I love it. You love
you love the Tkachuk brothers?
No.
He likes Dakota Joshua.
Yeah.
Come on. Not yet, I don't.
Give it time.
First shift, I bet you I will, though. I have a feeling.
He's not going to be one of those guys who makes a lot of mistakes. Like, he's not going to be one of those guys that costs you the game.
Yeah.
But he will lay the body, and he'll do those important things, but he also finds a way to get to the right area in front of the net. Especially when he plays with a guy like, in this case, Connor Garland, in Vancouver.
Yeah.
Garland knew how to get him the puck, and that helped. So if he plays with a guy that's like that, I think he'll thrive.
As you guys know from our group chat, I was joking on Saturday. I had 15 minutes to kill at the end of my half shift on Saturday, and I was just watching like highlights of Dakota Joshua fights. Like, he has no problem dropping him, but then he also doesn't seem to have a problem getting dropped every time he fights. Like, he doesn't win.
Yeah.
But he's a big boy, and he can handle it.
And you and I both know, like, when it comes to hockey, winning the fight isn't always the most important thing.
No, it doesn't mean that.
Because really, if your team is losing, getting into a fight is going to help energize your teammates, and that's the point
and
of
the
fighting
fan
in general.
And
the fan
base,
exactly.
Yeah.
So,
Last two PTOs I'll go over. Guy that you really liked, and I think you wanted on the Leafs at one point, Tyler Mott is PTO
great.
With the Panthers now.
Yeah.
Team that we hate, but, like Tyler Mott, hope that he makes that team.
Yeah. Tyler Mott is the type of player that, or I should say was, it's been a while since I've seen him play, but from what I remember when he was on Vancouver, one of the things I loved the most about him is he was the guy that would literally kill himself to get the puck to the net and get to the net. So he did everything he possibly could to drive to the net, and that's all you want in a player, really.
Cliche, but the guy just does the right things.
Yeah.
You can rely on him. He's responsible. He's not going to put up 30 goals.
Exactly.
But he's going to be that guy that you can rely on in tough situations. He was a center, is a center, right?
Yeah.
From what I understand, quite good at faceoffs.
Yeah.
Quite a penalty killer.
Yep.
So I think part of the reason that is that they announced 2 days ago that Matthew Tkachuk's out until December at least. So he's gonna bring some of the same intangibles, other than maybe that offensive side, but at least not to the same extent as Tkachuk would generally be, although I hate to say that, but it's true.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'll go over last two players, but I'll say them at the same time. So there's Kevin Rooney, New Jersey Devils, Connor Sheary, New York Rangers.
Sheary gets signed by the Rangers, I bet. Rooney. I'm not sure.
Rooney had an okay year last year. He had 5 goals, 5 assists in 70 games. So he did play pretty much a full season with the Flames.
What's he, a defenseman?
Center.
Okay.
I would say...
That's a tough one, man. That's a tough one.
I don't know. I'm not sure either of them signed, if I'm being honest. I don't think there's a spot for Sheary in New York.
Well, Connor Sheary only played 5 games with the Lightning last year, so he must have been battling injuries.
Yeah, for sure.
Based
on his history, that's why I said yes, he signs. But there's a good—that's a good point. If he has a bad camp, then what's the point, really?
I think he potentially has the skill, and he could make that team. I just don't think there's room for him with what the Rangers are trying to do.
Yeah.
They're going to want to build on last year, and I mean, just name JT Miller their captain.
Yeah.
They're making strides to make sure they're gonna have everything set ready to go for the season, because they're going to want to get out on a roll. I mean, the East is... I mean, the whole league is tough, but, I mean, the East, the Metropolitan, the Atlantic...
It's true.
There's no room anywhere for anybody.
Yeah,
it's just,
true.
Man,
yeah.
oh, man.
Yep, Yeah, I think this season in general, I mean, we could be surprised by PTOs. We could be surprised by free agent signings out of Europe. You know what I mean? Like, it can happen.
That's true.
So it'll be really interesting to see kind of where the teams line up after training camp and after the preseason is finished.
Yeah.
Those final rosters will be really exciting to see. Boys, before we continue on with anything else, and we've only got about 10 minutes left, I would like to bring up one thing that we have not yet talked about, I think, at all, this podcast. And maybe we would talk about it once, but the Vancouver Whitecaps soccer team. I'm very impressed with them this year. And in particular, they have recently signed the top player in Germany. His name is Thomas Müller.
He's
come to Vancouver and he's played, I think, about 4 games so far. He scored about 15 goals. Not actually. Wow. He scored a hat trick literally on his birthday a couple of nights ago, playing against the top team in the league, which is Philly. They beat them 7-0, right? So you're looking, before Thomas Müller came onto the team, they were having an incredible year already.
Yeah.
So to bring in the top player in Germany to come and play for your team and, you know, present, basically be the kind of glue that is going to help drive this team for the playoffs. It's incredible. It's something that Vancouver sports fans haven't seen since probably 2011 with the Canucks, and the way that the team is gelling, the way the team is playing, it's actually exciting to watch. I know you're not much of a soccer fan, but it is exciting to watch as somebody like me, who I'm just a sports fan in general. I love watching good teams play, especially teams that happen to be from my area. But yeah, the Vancouver Whitecaps have been incredibly impressive this year.
One of my customers talks about it all the time when they come in because he has season tickets.
Yeah, yeah.
So he loves soccer, loves the Whitecaps.
It's really cool to watch. You know, me and Charlie will sit down and we'll watch the game. And one of my favorite things about it is, I don't know if you've ever seen it or even been there for a game, their PA announcer, when they score, he always goes, "Goal!" on the microphone, and it just reverberates around the whole building because the way that the stadium is set up, it's so huge that the sound echoes, right? It just sounds really cool. I was like, man, I would love to be there for a goal, you know, and just hear that.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of thing that gets you psyched, eh? Like, just watching that kind of stuff. And this guy, like, scoring a hat trick on his birthday is pretty incredible. Now, to be fair, a few of his goals have been penalty kicks, but again, he scored a header to put the ball in the net. I think his third goal, his hat trick goal, his last game was a header. So he does make the right plays, and he passes the ball so well. Oh my gosh, it's just like they have a thing called a through ball, which is basically like, let's say a defender's here and you're here and your partner's here. He's going to run past the defender. You're going to kick the ball past the defender, through it, and then he's going to catch up to the ball, basically, and that's how they score the goals. He does that so well. He, like, sees the field so well and sees where guys are going and stuff like that. It's just really incredible.
Offside is tricky in soccer, too, so you got to worry about that.
Yeah, you have to. The ball has to get there before you do, basically, is the rule. So it's fun. So if you haven't had a chance to check out the Whitecaps, I definitely recommend it. It's fun. It's fun. It's fun to watch, and it's fun to watch teams win.
I've always wanted to go to a soccer game. I haven't done it yet. So, like, I remember watching, like, World Cups and stuff like that back in the late 90s, early 2000s.
Yeah, yeah.
Guy like, was it Zinedine Zidane?
Zidane. Yeah, the guy who headbutted the guy.
Yeah, that's right, too.
He was a great player, though. Yeah. He helped France win that World
Cup. I watched that game, and he got a red card. I was like, oh, my God.
Headbutted him right in the chest.
Yeah. I think it, like, injured the guy. Like, he was gone for a while. Yeah.
Ooh, sorry, yeah. I just hadn't looked over at the score in a while. Yeah. The Yankees were winning before, but they're really winning now.
Yeah, bottom of the ninth, 7-0 New York over Baltimore. So, safe to say,
you're saying there's a chance.
Yeah, really. Two outs.
Not when you don't swing at that pitch, though.
Anyway. So just exciting to watch them. Just, you know, it's not just him, obviously. The entire team is playing really well together. They're playing cohesive. Funny enough, it inspired me to watch Ted Lasso. I started watching Ted Lasso.
Nice.
Love the show, by the way. I don't know if you have a chance to watch it.
It's really good.
He's incredible. Yeah. But I definitely recommend checking out the Whitecaps if you haven't had a chance to watch them.
Nice.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, so BC Sports is looking good right now. Do you think we'll ever get a Major League Baseball team?
I'd love to see it.
Oh, wouldn't it be incredible?
I'd love to see that here. Yeah. And a basketball team, to be honest, back here too.
I watched
Grizzlies should have never left.
I watched this guy on YouTube that I follow who does little mini documentaries. And one of the things he talked about is the Grizzlies and how they left Vancouver. And it was so bad. You know, everyone in the league thought it was bad. Because Vancouver, a lot of players who came here, when they did come here to play, they realized it's a beautiful city and it's a beautiful place to play and stuff. Yep. I think that if they did bring a team back to Vancouver, that we would see a lot of players actually want to play here. They did a poll for NBA players, and one of the things they asked them was, like, where would you play given the chance to play somewhere else? Like, if there was a new team that they brought into the league, and where would you want to play? And they said Vancouver. A lot of them did. So it's, you know, it would be exciting to have a team play in Vancouver and have players that actually want to play in Vancouver, which is something we weren't, you know, experiencing back then. It would be really cool to get another team back in Vancouver, I think.
Yeah, I'd love that. Love to see it.
I would love it too, yeah.
Oh, man. That'd be cool. Yeah, so, you know, hockey's back. We got baseball coming to an end. Well, regular season coming to an end. We got baseball playoffs coming up. The NFL has just recently started. It's a lot of sports to watch and a lot of time, so it's going to be fun to watch and see what happens. What do you guys think? What do you guys think about the way things are looking for the NHL right now coming up to preseason?
Well, I think one of the biggest stories for this whole year, and at least before, obviously, preseason, is McDavid going to sign?
Yeah. That's going to be a question we're going to hear a lot this season, I think, especially coming to, well, that and Quinn Hughes.
Yeah.
Really. You know, the talk, it's actually kind of annoying, I'll be honest. Like, I hate it. You know, the whole, will he sign, will he stay, or will he go play with his brothers? And it's all Jim Rutherford's fault. This whole thing is Jim Rutherford's fault. He brought it up in a press conference, and now we can't stop talking about it.
Yep.
And I'm really hoping that it's all just a joke, and they announce his signing July 1st. Or no, when can he sign? January 1st, I think? His contract is up at the end of this year? Yeah.
Well, he could have signed last July.
Okay, then maybe next year is his final year, actually. That's what it is. And it's after next year is his final year. They can sign him to 8 years if they sign him this season. Like before, what is it, July 1st?
No, July 1st is when you can sign an extension.
Yeah, so he's...
What I mean by that is...
I know exactly what you're saying.
Yeah.
He's got a year after this year, right?
Yes.
He can only sign an extension for the following on July 1st.
That's right.
Yeah, and he will only be able to sign for 7 years.
He'll only be able to sign
for 7 years. The seven-year thing doesn't kick in until September, I believe. You'll have to look that up.
We only have a couple years, but if that's when the CBA starts.
Okay. He can still sign. Yeah,
July and September.
Yeah, that was the whole thing about Quinn Hughes' contract that everyone's like, okay, this is good for us, is that he can sign an 8-year contract.
Gotcha.
If he signs before, I believe it's September 1st, I think. We'll figure that out for another podcast. Of course.
They got a 2-month window then.
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
If Connor,
I mean, they're gonna throw the bang. Of course. Everything's going his way.
But he has the control though.
Yes.
If Connor McDavid does make it to free agency next year, what do you think he signs for?
$20 million.
Think he signs for?
$20 million.
AAV.
I think it'll be 16. I think
it might even be 17.
And I wouldn't be surprised, 19, maybe even 20.
I don't think it will be, but I could.
It wouldn't surprise me if he goes to play for an American team for that kind of money,
yeah.
Especially a no-tax state or something like that, especially a place where he's not going to be recognized everywhere he goes, or friggin' Edmontonians aren't going to maul him everywhere he goes.
I think he wants to be recognized, though.
I don't know. Like, yeah, I think that too, but I mean, you would think that. But at the same time, you watch behind the scenes when people are like seeing him in public and stuff. I remember the playoffs. I think it was last year. It might have been the year before, where he was out getting beer, celebrating one of their wins to go into the next round. And he was just being grabbed on by people and stuff. Like, he's got beer
outside the liquor store.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, probably Millwoods. Shouldn't have gone there, buddy.
Yeah, really. I mean, maybe that's on him, right? But yeah, it's just crazy to me, like, that people don't give him the space, like,
be a
human being.
One of my work colleagues is a big Oilers fan, and he told me something the other day I thought was interesting that could play into fact that I don't think has been reported at all, is that Connor McDavid's wife apparently just opened a nightclub in Edmonton, and above that is, like, I can't remember what he said, it's some sort of, like, fabrication shop or like, fashion shop, fashion design, like, above. So, I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, the fact that, like, yeah, sure, I'm sure she could run it from Boston or. Florida or something like that.
She can stand him. It's in Frosty. Yeah. But yeah, no, it definitely, you know, it does add a lot of speculation to everything. And you know, the media loves that. So, you know, it is what it is. But gentlemen, I'm afraid that's all the time we've got for this episode. Hopefully you guys had a great time. I know I did. Hopefully you had a good time too. Before we say goodbye, I just want to say thank you for watching the podcast. Make sure you check us out on all the avenues at which you can check out our podcast, which is, of course, anywhere you get your podcasts online, or you can check us out on YouTube. We're also available on Rogers TV, so hello to everybody watching us at home there as well. Until the next episode of the Puck and Pod, my name is Joe.
My name is Brandon.
And I'm Paul.
We'll see you guys in the next one.